Hey there, it's Cat Lady Justin with Emily. Say hi, Emily. And this is the Kitty Boss Podcast, where we pick, pamper, and protect your practically perfect pussycat for a lifetime of unconditional love. And today is our slightly late catching up with Dr. Rachel Geller for the month of June. And what I'd like to talk to her about today is all things summertime. So things that have to do with overheating, hydration, all the things to keep in mind during the summertime with your cats. So as you know, once a month we get together with Dr. Rachel Geller, who is a cat behaviorist, a professional cat behaviorist, who's written books and has a new nonprofit that actually will help people who are on low income to do or get the things that they need for cats, because her services are offered free of charge as a service to the cat community. So without further ado, we already know her, Dr. Rachel Geller. Rachel, welcome. I did the intros with my assistant today, because Emily is here to join us today. So I don't know how long she's going to stick around.
That is a very cute assistant.
I don't know how long she's going to stick around, but she's here. And she's not wearing the collar that she normally wears because I found that it was irritating her neck. So she's what I call nude right now, meaning she's not wearing a collar because she had irritation on the neck. But that's no, she's gone away now, but that's okay. So welcome. And what I thought we'd talk about this month together is things, issues, or whatever that have to do with the summertime, because it's June and we're in the summer now, and then we'll have July, August, and it'll still be summer. So now that we've entered into summer, that we're here, we've got things like hot weather, in some places dry weather, and all kinds of issues that come along during the summer. And of course, I know there's parts of the world where it's not summer right now, but that's okay. And so I thought we'd talk about that, if that makes sense. So,
yes, perfect timing.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the idea. So anyway, welcome to the show. And so one reason it came in mind is one of the issues that I had with the summertime and when the weather is hot is overheating. And so Charlotte seems to be pretty okay with it. She just will lounge around, whether it's in the sun, in the shade, it doesn't matter. And she's the fluffy one. She's the big fluff with a giant fur coat. And she just lounges around and just doesn't do anything but lays. Whereas Emily, who's got short hair, who you just met, she suffers from the heat. She'll start panting and she won't stay downstairs. She'll go up to the loft where it's the hottest because that's her territory, and she just suffers through the heat. So, you know, one thing and she doesn't like fans blowing on her. So one thing I did is I spent a lot of money on a little portable air conditioning unit because I don't need central or any kind of massive thing here because I live in the United Kingdom where it's not hot most of the time. And I have no use for an air conditioner because I'm fine with a fan and an open window. But Emily really needed something like that. So actually, so far, the hundreds of dollars I spent on this thing, I've used it one time, but I was glad I had it because it was hot. It was what we call hot, which is 80 degrees. And Emily was really like, and so this helped her to, you know, be where she likes to be in the heat. So I guess the first thing we talk about is overheating and different cats and what you might suggest with that.
So it does get very hot. So coming here from the Boston area, it gets very hot. And not only that, it gets very humid because we're so close to the water. So, a lot of times cats really do suffer in that heat and humidity. So, you know, simple things like keeping your blinds drawn, you know, close the shades when there are really sunny areas, beaming into the house will help keep your cats cool. Make sure you always, always have out fresh water for your cats to drink. That will not only keep them hydrated, but cool water helps cool them down as well. And it is interesting that a lot of cats don't like the noise of fans, or some cats don't even like the noise of the air conditioner, especially if you have one of those eco air conditioners where they kick on and off. A lot of cats dislike that. So, you know, if you have a cat who doesn't like the fan or doesn't love the air conditioner, you can always make sure there's space on like a tile floor where your cat might want to go and just sprawl out on the cool tiles. And another suggestion is, if you have a basement, having that be the area where you set up a lot of your cat toys and the food and so forth. So she's spending more time in a cooler subterranean basement rather than on the upper level of your house.
Yeah, that makes good sense, that. And so, you know, I have the challenge with Emily that I have a hard time enticing her to go to a decent place. So I did the whole air conditioning thing.
Yeah.
But Charlotte's not a problem. It's just funny, again, because Charlotte's the long hair and Emily's the short hair.
Yeah.
And you'd think it'd be the opposite, but it's
not.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of really small portable air conditioners on the market too. So that's always a good choice if your cat is really, you know, needs to cool down. But if you see your cat panting or the cat is really lethargic, then that's the time to call your veterinarian.
Yeah, because, you know, that's the issue that I had is Emily was panting. And you know, we consulted with the vet and figured out why and all that. And she's got a little heart thing going on, but it's nothing too major or something to be alarmed about, just to be aware about that she does get that, which makes sense because she's a bit more of a high-strung cat. Like she's a bit more, you know, high-strung.
Yeah.
And so which is okay, because as you saw, she's lovely and loving and a wonderful, wonderful companion. But I need to take care of her because cats are very individual pets, VIPs. You know, there's a big difference between Emily and Charlotte. They're both cats, of course, but the way I brush their teeth, the way I feed them, the way I take care of them is actually very different. And it's not cookie cutter with cats so much as it is with dogs. Dogs tend to have certain standard templates, whereas cats seem to color outside the lines most of the time. And
yeah.
So that's the unique thing. Now,
cats,
you mentioned
cats
some
like yeah. people in that way, that, you know, yeah. we're all very, very different. Yes,
for sure. I call them VIPs, very individual pets. At Disneyland, where I used to work, we used to call people VIPs, very individual persons, and say everyone's a very individual person. And so I like that analogy. So you mentioned something about the water in terms of the heat and it enabling them to cool down. But the other issue, of course, with water is the hydration, which is really important. And the reason that's something that's come up for me is because Charlotte tends to not drink enough water. See, Emily will drink a ton and then soil that litter box in so quickly with peeing in it. But Charlotte, on the other hand, doesn't like to drink a lot of water. She will, but not a lot. I had to come up with workarounds to get her hydrated, which is to take her already wet food, add more water into it, yes. mash it up, and heat it up a little bit so she'd really eat it, and then get her hydrated that way. And the reason I had to do that is because I noticed there was some pink coloration in her urine. And I was scared. What is that, blood, whatever? So we took her to the vet and, you know, they analyzed what they needed to do. And it turned out to be crystals in the urine, which were from dehydration.
Yeah.
And so that's something to be very careful of with cats, because as far as I'm aware, most cats don't drink that much. They get a lot of their hydration from the food, which is why soft food's important. And so it's really important to be really careful with that, especially during the summertime. So,
yeah, and you can always entice your cat to, you know, get more water. Like you said, you can sprinkle it into the wet food. You can mix it in, let the food get soupy. But even if you do have a cat who eats dry food, you can take some water, sprinkle it on the top of the dry food, just a little bit, just enough so the dry food absorbs that water. And that's another little way you can get water into your cat as well, particularly if you have a cat who really is more of a dry food eater. To entice your cats to drink more, some cats don't love drinking from the standing water bowl, because for many cats, their instinct to survive is based on knowing the water is fresh and flowing. So some cats, you may have better luck with one of those fountains, or there are all kinds of different products on the market that sort of get the water moving a little bit. But you can even bring your cat to the water. This is a little thing I do all the time. I just put my finger in the water, mix it around a little bit, get it swirling, and often that will be enough just to get the cat enticed to go over and drink.
And that's interesting, which is there another difference and shows you how cats are so individualized, because my cats actually, I bought one of those fountain thingies and neither one of them would go near it. I keep the thing as a little fountain in my living room because it makes a pleasant little running water noise and all that. But the cats don't want to have anything to do with it. They drink from the sitting bowl. So some cats, you know, they prefer to drink out of running water. It's fresh and all that instinctually. But other cats, like my two, don't want to touch the thing, which is really funny. And I've seen cats drinking out of faucets. I've seen, you know, so there's lots of exceptions to this thing. But the really important thing, is, especially during the summer months, is that the cats really need to stay hydrated. They need to stay cool. Mm-hmm. They need, but they also need to stay, you know, wet inside if it were. And if you do notice any problems, like I did with Charlotte, you of course need to take them to the vet and see what's going on there. If there's, you know, pink urine or something, you know, an odd smell that's too pungent, too ammonia smell, that mm-hmm. needs to go to the vet as well.
And if you have if you have a single cat, it's really easy to check the litter box too and see how wet it is. So that can be another sign that, you know, maybe your cat needs a little more water. But it is so funny how individual they all are, and they definitely have their preferences, and they will, you know, in their own way, inform us of their opinions. So it's it is kind of cute.
Oh, well, they sure do.
They do.
There's another interesting thing with cats, and that is that sun. So cats, a little bit like a lion, you know, they do like to lounge around in the sun and sunbathe, as it were. But we do have to be careful with some cats, because a little bit like people, they can get problems. They can get a sunburn. They can get a skin cancer, that kind of thing, especially your more white cats. So their skin is sensitive. And so that's also something that we should be aware of, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they're, you know, just like a person, if we're outside in the sun too long, we're going to get a sunburn. And cats are the same way. And it's interesting because we think, oh, they have the fur that can protect them. But I can remember the first year I ran the Boston Marathon here in Boston, I didn't think about my scalp. You know, when I put sunscreen all over, but I didn't think about my scalp. And when I got to the finish line, I noticed, ooh, I feel it's kind of hurting here. And I had a sunburn, you know, on my scalp. So yes, that sun will find a way to sneak in there, and your cat can definitely be exposed to the sun, even if you're thinking that they have long fur and they won't need sunscreen. Well, you can see I kind of have some long fur and I still got sunburned. So it's really important to kind of cover every base there.
Yeah, and cats, you know, of course, it's like the sun does penetrate through things, and we need to be very careful about that, and we need to be very careful about where they go as well. So in terms of, because my cats are indoor cats, so I don't have to worry about so many things that are present outside during the summer. I do take them out in the garden sometimes, and they enjoy themselves. They eat some grass, come inside to puke it up, but that's a whole other story. But what are some of the things that we should look out for in the summertime, particularly if we have outdoor cats, cats that do go outside?
I mean, there's so many, you know, bugs and insects and ticks and fleas and all of these things that are much more prevalent if you're bringing your cat outside. So, you know, if you do see your cat scratching herself or anything like that, I mean, in general, any behavior or energy or lack thereof, you always want to bring, you know, call your vet. But you can definitely check your cat for fleas, check your cat for ticks. Be aware, you know, some cats, when they go outside, do drink from running water, and that can make them sick. So I also am a big fan of keeping your cats indoors, because there are so many dangers out there. But if you really do feel like you want to bring your cat outside, you know, if you're there with the cat supervising, or you have a leash or you have a harness, those are ways to really protect your cat when she does go outside. And the other thing is, you know, we're in mating season and kitten season. So of course, make sure your cats are spayed, your cats are neutered, and just be aware of other cats who may be roaming that territory outside, because that can be a whole issue with cats that are territorial with their outside colonies as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because I was out in the garden doing some things with my outbuilding. I have a building out there and pulling some ivies down and all that. And we had a visitor. We had this big, beautiful, fluffy thing that looked like Sylvester from Sylvester and Tweety from the cartoon. It's a really lovely cat. And, you know, it scuttled off when I made some noise and all that. My cats are territorial like that, both of them. So I love having visitors in the garden or out front or whatever when I can see them through the window, but the cats tend to get agitated when they see that. Yeah. And especially, I didn't realize this, but Charlotte, who's the big fluffy thing, I mean, you've seen photos of her and everything, and she's just so charming and sweet and meow, and she's talkative, and you'd never think that this was a predator. And so she goes outside, she's sauntering with, you know, her sashaying about. And there's this cat that was visiting the garden. It was a cute little cat. And he made the mistake of starting to hiss and growl at Charlotte. Now, I didn't know this about Charlotte, but she is the toughest thing ever. She just went for this cat, chased him under the hedge to the neighbor's garden, and she came back into our garden so proud, puffed up like this, like she just scared the living daylights out of this other cat. And I'd never seen Charlotte like take this thing and just go, and like, what an amazing, you know, like an Amazon, you know, she is just like this real predator. And normally she's like this sweet, fluffy thing.
Yeah.
And here she is. Yeah. It's like, whoa, don't mess with Charlotte.
Well, you know, for a lot of cats, territory is so important. And when a cat gets outdoors, they have a very strong need to monitor their territory, stand their ground, assess any dangers for invaders. And it's really important to them to let other cats know that they are there and they're going to be standing their ground should anybody else enter their territory. Cats really, really dislike it when they feel like their territory is up for grabs. That causes a lot of stress in cats. And as you saw, it can actually even cause a belligerent reaction to the innocent bystander cat who thought he was just having a little stroll in your garden. But they are so territorial, and they very much live their lives around their territory and monitoring and watching that territory. So it is kind of fascinating, because your cat really can turn into Cujo when she senses another cat or any other invader on her territory. They have a very strong need, and it's just in a cat's instinct. So you may never see it if you keep your cats indoors all the time. Although some people will tell me their cat sees an outside cat from the window, and they'll go into those aggressive behaviors as well. So, windows is going to be our next topic. So
yeah,
just tell me when.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the window thing for my cats is funny, because they don't get like aggressive, but they get agitated. Like they'll start flicking and what's that? You know, who's he? You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And as far as the territory goes, I think what we're saying here is cats are not communists. They do not like to. They don't believe in communal living. Of course, if they're in a colony, that's different. But they're in their colony. They don't want some outsiders coming in. So they are quite territorial. They don't like open borders either, you know, that kind of thing. So that's
even in the colony, if a new cat comes in, there's this whole ritual where that cat has to stay on the periphery at first and kind of work his status on the way in. So it's they're fascinating creatures, really. I'm so glad that we do these all the time, because I think sometimes we meander down different roads and just figure out different
Also, I think it's important to repeat some things that are important, because and to go over, to loop around them. It's not a linear thing. Cats, if anything, cats are not linear. Cats are more like fractals, or more like, you know, Fibonacci sequences or whatever, as opposed to just this linear thing. So what we like to do is just have discussions and talk about these important, pertinent topics that are, you know, possibly seasonal. I mean, possibly next year we'll say a lot of the same things again, but it's important that we talk about them, because these are very important things.
But and on the level of importance, I do want to make sure that, you know, it's the time of year where people want to open their windows, they want to get fresh air. Make sure you have those window locks or wedges on your windows so they can't open more than a few inches. And make sure your screens are secure, because I unfortunately, cats can lean against screens that are not super tight and not super secure, and they can fall out. And a cat who can get his head into an opening can usually squeeze his whole body into an opening. So make sure, you know, in my house, every window has locks on, so the windows can't open more than a certain height. And I really feel that that's very safe. The best way to provide safety for your cats is putting those window locks on. I know a lot, sometimes even people say to me, well, my cat doesn't want to go outside, but, you know, I don't need to worry about it. But you never know if something might spook your cat or cause fear in your cat and make the cat react and take off someplace that he may not be planning on going. So the best thing to do is have those window locks, window wedges. They come in all different styles, all different types, budget conscious, fancy. Put those on all of your windows. Never trust that screen is going to, you know, hold the weight of a cat who leans against that screen or a cat who gets spooked and wants to run out.
Well, there's not only that, but when I was growing up, before I went to college, I had a cat. We had a cat named Iggy. She was this gray and silver cat, not the friendliest thing in the world, not the by far the best cat I've had, but she was a personality. But she liked to go out, and she was supposed to be an indoor cat. And our house was, this was a big house in Michigan, and we had screens on all the windows. Well, Iggy was very good at it's not that she was pressing against them. She would, you know, use her claws and her teeth and manipulate the thing so she could pull the screen out of the guide rails that it was attached into and actually just make herself a portal and go out. And she's really good at that. It was almost like those screens weren't worth a lot.
Yes.
So it just depends on the individual cat, how clever it is, how assertive it is in wanting to go out. Because and also depends on the type of window you have. Because we had those windows that could wedge only a little bit open, but my dad or whoever it was always insisted on opening it too much. It was really annoying because then Iggy would get out. But you know, and then we had neighbors with dogs, giant dogs and all this. I was always worried about, you know, she shouldn't be going out like that. But she loved going out. So cats will also be very clever at figuring out how to tear open something, depending on the cat. Now, the other thing is, of course, the type of window you have. So here where I live now in the UK, I have these windows that are that only open on the top.
Oh yeah,
and they open like this, only on the top. So theoretically, they could get out. They could jump because cats can jump very high. So they could jump, but they've never figured that out. So they, as far as they know, they can't get out those windows. Now, of course, if they get spooked, or if something happens, then maybe they would figure out that I could bolt out that hole there.
Yeah.
That's really high. That's normally inconvenient, and I'm not bothered. And so I'm very careful with that to keep those windows, even in the hot weather, to keep those windows closed unless I'm specifically airing out the room or I'm in the room or whatever, so that I don't leave, also for security reasons, right? Because, I mean, why would a burglar could, you know, wide open thing. Sure. I'm just going to slip in there. And so I think that it's wise for security reasons also to keep them closed, but also for the cat. So it's important also the type of window.
I tell people to think in terms of a toddler. You know, if you're going to go in the shower or you're running a few errands, don't say to yourself, oh, I can leave the windows. I'm just going to be a minute. I'm just taking a shower. You know, really, you can't be too safe. If you're not going to be in that area, put those window locks on or close the windows temporarily, whatever, whatever's going to keep your cat safe, because something, just like having a baby or a toddler, right? Something can happen in an instant. So I always tell people, don't think, well, I'll just be gone a short time. I'm just jumping in the shower. I'm just using the bathroom. Really play it safe and close the windows when you're not in that room with your cats.
Yeah, and cats are really fast too. So in the short period of time, they can accomplish a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's really important. So that's windows. Now, another obvious thing that comes up for the summertime that we should be aware of is related to the heat is, of course, the effect that the heat has on food. And so we want to feed our cats fresh food, obviously, and there are different varieties available. Some people like raw food, some people like the dehydrated stuff you reconstitute, some people open a can, and there's pluses and minuses to all of that. But one thing we need to keep in mind, especially with the wet food, is how long it's been out in the summer. Yeah. Because in the winter, you can probably leave it out longer if it's cold. But in the summertime, you want to be careful that that food doesn't go off and then the cat's eating something rotten.
Yes, of course. So you wouldn't, you know, have a tuna fish sandwich for lunch, put it on the counter, and, you know, 4 or 5 hours later, have that same thing for dinner, because it's going to be all full of bacteria and microbes and yucky things that you don't intend to put into your belly. So yes, change the food a few times during the day so that it's fresh. And the other thing is, I see this, people do this a lot with dry food. Don't assume that just topping off the dry food with fresh food on top of like the existing food in the bowl is going to be safe for your cat. Same with the same technique goes for dry food. If your dry food's been out for several hours, you know, particularly in the summer where things can grow and multiply and so forth, dump out that whole dry food bowl and refill it with fresh food. And of course, make sure you're washing your bowls regularly. You know, in the hot weather, you do need to do that more. I know some people use paper plates because they find that easier. That's fine too. And I would mention too that the stainless steel metal bowls are really the safest, because in the summertime, you know, pores on things open, and this includes things like ceramics or types of materials as pottery materials. So if you're using a ceramic bowl, bacteria and microbes can absolutely get in little cracks of those bowls, and those bowls can then pass on that bacteria to your cat.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that about the ceramic versus the stainless steel, because I did hear once that some cats are they're averse to the stainless steel, like they don't like it. So I'm not sure why. I think it had to do with see their reflection in it or something. It was some strange explanation, but have you heard that before?
I have not heard that particular one. So here you go. You learn something new every day.
Oh, well, there you go. So I heard some cats don't like it. I actually have the ceramics around my house, both for the water and the food. So that's an interesting one. Although I do have my slow feeder bowls. They're not ceramic. They're more like that, whatever that plastic material is that's relatively safe. So,
but if you're cleaning your bowls regularly, you're probably okay. But, you know, a lot of people don't clean their bowls regularly. And I particularly see this with dry food, where they'll eat some of it. There's still like maybe a layer of dry food on the bottom, maybe like a half an inch. And rather than tossing it and cleaning the bowl, people just kind of top it off. So that's not so great for your cat.
No. And then there's another issue when it comes to dry food, which I read about, because there's people who have storage containers for their dry food, and that can, for dogs too, by the way, and that could be actually a little bit dangerous, because what can happen is that there can get some kind of a mold or something that gets infested in there, and that could be pretty deadly for your cat. So it's really important with the dry food, because even if the wet food might have bacteria or something that then rots or mold slightly, and then, you know, makes your cat sick, the dry food could develop a mold that then actually could also make your cat sick or kill it. So it's very important with food to be very, to take that seriously and not just throw something down.
Yeah, plastic is another thing that can be porous. You know, and some of those things too, maybe they may not get sick, but they may get like the feline acne on their chins. So, you know, I usually advocate stainless steel bowls or, you know, paper plates that you toss. But although that's not quite as green as the stainless steel bowl, but you know, sometimes it's what your cat's going to eat off of too. But definitely make sure if you're using plastic or you're using ceramic that you're really washing those with very hot water and, you know, really disinfecting and cleaning them regularly, because they do tend to hold in more of those substances that you know, quickly multiply and divide more in the summer months than in the winter months. The other thing about the stainless steel is they are really easy to clean too. You know, because they don't get stuff in those little hidey holes and scratches within the bowl.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And so maybe I should try stainless steel, at least buy one and see how they react to it. Because
you know what? Buy one and rather than filling it fresh with fresh food, use some food from the bowls they've already been using. So some of their familiar scent is on that new bowl.
Oh, that's a good idea. And see how they react, because maybe they'll like it.
Yeah.
Also, because the bowls I'm using now are kind of my bowls, because I kept dropping them in the sink and then breaking them. So I've run out of actual cat bowls. So they're just using my bowls now. So I just got tired of buying them. So, and I have a lot. So I thought, here, just use these. So that's a whole other story, though. So that's really important, too, that I didn't know about, is to protect from the pathogens, obviously, and to use stainless steel as a preferred thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when it comes to the summertime and we talk about molds and bacteria and other kinds of things that might be harmful to plants, then there's, of course, the plant life, which we could have talked about in the springtime, but I think it's more relevant in the summer, because in the spring it's just coming out and now everything's in full bloom. And so we got to be really careful, because cats, I don't know how big the list is for other animals, but the list of plants that are toxic to cats is very big.
It's very long, yes. Yeah, and what's interesting with cats is even if it's not toxic to the cats, because of things they're not used to eating, sometimes they do get stuck in the digestive tract. So like leaves that might be, you know, they're not poisonous, but they're really, since cats don't typically chew their food that much, those things can get stuck, you know, and cats can really get sick from that too. So yeah, it's really important to make sure you're, again, you know, watching your cat for any signs of lethargy or feeling ill, because things that might seem relatively innocuous can be a big deal for a cat. I had a cat once who spent the night in an emergency room because somebody had sent me a plant, and although I was careful and put the plant someplace up high, a leaf had fallen off and she ate that leaf. Now the leaf wasn't poisonous, it didn't kill her, but it didn't come out the other end either. It kind of rested in that colon and started creating all kinds of problems. But yeah, cats are, and I mean, I would just be err on the side of safety and caution, and just don't let your cats eat anything when they're outdoors, you know, if you're there supervising and watching, because there's so many flowers and plants that not only are toxic to cats, but can cause some type of distress in their bellies. And, you know, nobody needs that.
No, and certainly not, especially if you have a long-haired cat, you don't need that. But, you know, and it reminds me of the sad story of, you know, one of my exes who had a cat, and the cat died of kidney failure. And, you know, and you know, the truth is when I think about it, the mother loved lilies. So there were always lilies in the house. And that's probably one of the deadliest family of plants and flowers for cats. The lily will cause kidney failure. So when I heard that this cat died of kidney failure, I'm like, well, I'm not surprised. There's lilies all over the house. It was bound to happen eventually. It's extremely toxic to cats. I don't ever keep lilies in the house. If someone gives me something from the general family of the lilies, I generally don't keep it. I either, you know, I say thank you and then I give it away.
Yes.
I don't usually throw it in the garbage. I usually find a neighbor or someone to pass it forward to, because they are very dangerous. So we need to really keep that in mind. And there's a lot of plants like that in that category of lily that are really, you should probably not even have in the house. And you think, oh, well, if it's up high and inaccessible, it's like, no, because the pollen gets in the air. And it gets everywhere. And so it's almost impossible to keep that one safe. It really is important.
It really is.
If you've got a cat, you know, enjoy your lilies, you know, at somebody else's house. And then make sure you don't have any pollen on your clothes when you're coming home. Because it really is that dangerous.
It really is. And, you know, fortunately in my case, it wasn't due to a lily, but I did learn that the hard way that, you know, so many of these plants people might send to you, you know, even roses or, at, you know, lilies on Easter, as you were mentioning, you know, when we think we can put it up high, or maybe we don't even realize that like a typical bouquet or houseplant could be dangerous, but it really can be so treacherous for a cat to eat or chew. And sometimes cats just, they're not even hungry, you know, they just want to see what it is. Maybe the leaf is moving, you know, it's just not worth it. I 100% agree with Justin. It's not worth it to have those in your house because they are so very dangerous. It's a very high risk thing to have, you know.
Yeah. And what, and you said roses? Roses are, as far as I thought roses weren't that bad.
Well, the leaves, again, are the problem. And I don't think they're poisonous, but because of their size and shape and consistency, they can get stuck in their digestive tract. So, you know, stuff like that, if you don't catch it right away, can be really dangerous for a cat,
too.
It
can be a problem, yeah, for sure. So if you have that. Yeah. And so, you know, so on that note, because, you know, some people love plants and love flowers and all that. So do you know which ones do you usually buy? Like what's safe? What's a safe bet for me to have in my house?
Well, I've gotten to the point where I just don't have anything because, because like I said, if it's not deadly, it can hurt in some other way. And my cat's a really good jumper. So even if I put something up high, there's a chance that
they can get
that they get to it. Or, you know, a leaf or petal can fall off of something. So, you know, that can be a problem too. So even if they're not, even if the plant itself isn't deadly, I feel like enough other things can happen that it's probably not worth keeping that stuff in your home.
You can keep cat grass.
Cat grass is an excellent choice. Yes.
Or catnip plants, you know. You can keep that in the house. You know, that's no problem.
That's a plant. And so
you have to have a plant.
Catnip is okay too. Yes.
Yeah. I have a few plants that are not necessarily the best for cats, but they're in places that my cats really don't go. They don't go at all to it. So I have an aloe vera, for example, and that's not good for cats. But I've never seen my cats even remotely interested in the thing, which is good.
Which is good. You know, so again, you know, use your best judgment, right? Because I know, you know, you're like me and you would do anything for your cat and you never want to put your cat into any type of jeopardy.
Sure. I mean,
so clearly you
I saw them attacking it and they wouldn't leave it alone, I'd put the thing outside and hope for the best, hope it doesn't die in the winter or whatever. So it's because we have winter here, you know, so I think that to me would be, it's a priority and it's really important. So we talked about lots of things today. We talked, which are really important in the summer. The last thing we talked about, of course, was plants. And the safest thing to do is just, you know, not keep anything that your cat's going to get to in the house. But cat grass is great, of course. They love that. And then we talked about, you know, because there's so many things that are toxic to cats, especially lilies. And then we, of course, talked about hydration and how important it is for cats to have water, not just to stay cool, but also to hydrate themselves, just like people, really. Yeah. And we talked about food and to make sure that, you know, don't leave the food out there too long because it's going to go off faster. You wouldn't eat a tuna fish sandwich that's been sitting on your counter for 6 hours. So why do you think it's okay for the cat? And on that note, don't leave your food out on the counter for 6 hours. Don't be a pig. If you're eating, you know, your cat might be curious about what it is. And if you're rotting tuna fish with maggots on it or flies that have already attacked it are sitting there on the counter, your cat might get interested in that thing. It smells fishy. And it might also have things in it that are no good for cats, you know, like onions and stuff. So just be very careful with food, especially in the winter, in the summer. Because the other thing that happens in the summer is, of course, the aroma goes out. Because I remember I mentioned the vet said to heat the food up slightly so that she's encouraged to eat it.
Yes.
And that's because it releases the aroma. So in the summer, you get whatever it is you're eating or the cat's eating, the aroma, the scent is going to get out into the air and possibly attract the cat. So we got to be very careful with that. And the safest bet is, of course, you know, steel bowls so that they're easy to clean and clean regularly. And I'm surprised to hear that there's people from you that there's people who don't clean their bowls regularly, because that's you know, you would, and maybe they do this too. Would you eat out of a dirt? Would you grab a dish from the dirty dish that has some crusty old like tomato sauce encrusted on it and just like eat off of that?
No,
I wouldn't do that. But maybe
I'm always amazed at the amount of people who don't, you know, clean the bowls regularly, I think they feel like, well, you know, it's still cleaner than it would be outside, and they kind of couch it in that way, that if, like, well, if a cat was outdoors, you know, he'd be eating things that might have been lying around for a while or dead for a while. But cats really have a very strong survival instinct, and one of their strongest, their sense of smell is their strongest scent. So if your cat does eat food that's been out there for a while, I would be surprised, because they usually will sense that something's wrong with it. So you want your cat to know he can go to the bowl regularly and it's always going to have fresh, safe food. You want your cat to know he can go to the water bowl all the time and it's going to be filled with fresh, safe water. Because all of these things can cause different aversions and different problems in cats if they're not feeling safe in their territory and they don't, you know, have that feeling that their environment is safe for them. That can be very stressful for a cat. So even if you think your cat might nibble on something or might drink some old water, it's just good practice to make sure everything is fresh and clean on a daily basis. Because yes, I certainly would not want to eat something that's been sitting out for hours and has like that crust on it. And I certainly wouldn't want to drink water that has that microfilm on it. So really important to clean regularly.
Well, that said, sometimes you see cats with a preference for they go after the dirty puddle instead of eating the clean bowl that they have at home. You see that sometimes and you wonder what's going on there. Does it have like flavor you like or something? So what's up with that?
That's the thing with cats. You can say what you should do and you can say what works, and there's always an exception or two.
Yeah, or two or three. And so that's why it's important to do the right things and make them available, because the cat will choose, you know, what's amongst what is available to it. So it's really important that we have those things available to it. And you touched on something else that's interesting, which is, you know, the life, you know, forms, insects, it might eat something like that. So that's another thing to be aware of in the summer. I noticed certainly this year, there's a lot of caterpillars out there in the garden. In the house, there's been some flies and some moths and all this. So we want all, and spiders, of course. And we want to be aware of the insect life as well as the other, you know, potential squirrels or hedgehogs or whatever other animal life is out there in the summer that your cat might encounter.
Yes. I mean, I'll often notice even in the water bowl in my house, there might be like a dead bug in there or a dead moth. So yes, you know, we don't want our cats ingesting all of those things. So, you know,
sometimes it can't help it if it's attacking it and it goes and it eats the thing. That's nature doing its business.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it's very similar to having a young child or a toddler. You would not let your toddler just go outside, walk around, eat various things, eat all kinds of plants. So kind of put those same lessons onto your cat, who is also, you know, a living being that needs your guidance.
And an intelligent being too, they are, you know, but they still will make mistakes. Because that's a thing that many people think is that, oh, well, it's nature. So cats will have the instincts and they'll know what to do. They'll know what not to eat and what to eat and all that. And it's like, and that's actually not true. It's true for some cats, just like some people have street smarts and other people don't. Yes. Not every cat has all the instincts and will know exactly what to eat, what to avoid and all that.
Especially domesticated cats. So, you know, people will say to me, why doesn't my cat cover the poop in the litter box? Well, some do. Some still have that held over from when they were outside. And, you know, there's that very strong need to cover your scent, so they do cover it. But some domesticated cats have, through the years, realized they don't really need to cover what they've done in the litter box.
You know what my cat does? You know what my two do? They call me. They don't cover the litter. They'll start meowing, meowing, meowing to call me to go and scoop the litter into the toilet. So they basically are commanding me to get rid of the. They don't cover it up. They call me to get rid of it.
So you're an example of a very, you know, well-trained domesticated cat. But the same thing goes for, you know, a lot of these other things that we're talking about. Just like us, we all have stronger or less strong survival instincts. So if I drop something on the kitchen floor, my instinct says that item, that food is now dirty. I don't want to put it in my mouth. That's my survival instinct. My husband, on the other hand, and drop things on the floor.
5-second rule.
Yeah, I think it's okay. So, you know, people seem to think it's this huge, major, big deal if cats act differently than we might counsel them that they're going to act. But the fact is, just like us, they have different levels of reactions, different levels of their own security, different levels of what is going to be safe to do. You know, and it's really no different. I would never bungee jump, but, you know, other humans do. So
yeah, some love it.
Cats, you know, some cats will go up to that cat food that's been sitting out for an hour or so and sniff it and say, there is no way that I'm eating this. And another cat might come up and say, what's the big deal? It's probably okay. So it's up to us to make sure that food is always fresh and clean.
Yeah, that's very true. So, and certainly Emily and Charlotte also have different attitudes towards their food. Just the two of them, even though they're both raised by me, they're both my cats. They've always lived here with me. So it's even they have different attitudes toward it. Like Charlotte is a lot pickier, but Emily is a lot greedier. So Charlotte likes to eat, but Emily likes to eat more, and Charlotte's bigger, and I don't understand that. Like, it's almost like the conundrum of the cow or the hippopotamus or the elephant. These animals that are, you know, herbivores. They're vegans ostensibly, right?
Yes.
And yet they're so massive. They built this gigantic body not touching meat, you know, and it's like, how does that work, you know? And so it's almost like that. So my big cat doesn't eat as much as my little cat. It's just metabolic differences.
And there's
also immune differences and all kinds of things that factor into it. And in the summer, we need to be aware of things that affect all of that. Same thing with the metabolic difference with the heat. Yeah. And why one overheats and the other doesn't. So we talked about air conditioning and overheating and what to do with your windows and the sunshine, and all these things are really, really important to protect our practically perfect pussycats from whatever dangers are out there. Because again, you know, I don't know if you heard the intro, but I always like to intro it saying, you know, this is Kitty Boss, where we pick, pamper, and protect your practically perfect pussycat for a lifetime of unconditional love. Now, how you go about doing that, there's 1,000 techniques, of course. There's 1,000 tips and tricks. And of course, there's also preferences. Like, some people are more overprotective than others. Some people are more whatever. Yes. And, you know, and it's really a choice that people have as to how they want to manage their cat. But if you want your cat to potentially live to 30, you know, because some of the oldest cats in the world in history have lived that long. If you want that to be an open door, then you need to do more of the things that are going to enhance its life and its lifespan and its happiness and well-being. And if you don't, if you just want to have something for, you know, 12 years, then go ahead and, you know, feed it the cheapest things and don't even care, and bring flowers into your house. And then, but then don't cry when the, you know, the thing doesn't live as long as it could potentially live to. So that's the thing that I try to just present the options out there. Obviously, I do a lot more than most people do, but that's me. I don't expect someone to do what I do. You know, I've gotten into, you know, I've had relationship difficulties sometimes in the past with how much I do for the cat. And they're like, you don't worship me this much. And I'm like, oh, I know, but you're not fluffy and cute, and, you know, and you've got a big mouth. You know, and but
you're talking to somebody who, as you know, wrote a book. And in the foreword of the book was written by my husband. And within that foreword is his top 10 list of how he knows I love the cats more than him.
Oh, I like that. That's a great foreword. That's hilarious. So I don't have that problem now, but it's come up in the past with previous relationships and how into the cats I am. Luckily now I'm cool with the relationship of, and now understands the cats and how much I love them. But that's great. So is there anything else you'd like to say or ask before we end off today's show?
Well, first I would just like to thank you. It's always a wonderful and informative time, as usual, at the same time, which is great. I think people probably listen to your shows and take the advice and techniques because you make it fun. You present the information in a fun way, and it's very relatable because you always bring in your own cats into the conversation.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, because it's stuff by experience. I practice what I preach, of course. But and then the other thing is we do our longer catch-ups, and, you know, and most of the other episodes in between are just short 5 maybe 10-minute episodes about a pertinent issue to do with everything from teeth to grooming to this. I've covered, you know, like close to 100 different topics in short form. And that way people can really learn a lot by listening to the podcast or, you know, and when we do our catch up, some people might be seeing the recording. So this is the occasional monthly catch ups where it goes up, pops up on YouTube or on the live streams if someone's watching it. So I've put a banner down with your website. So if somebody needs your help, which is, of course, free of charge, if they have a behavior issue, if you're about to surrender your cat because you're pulling your hair out and you don't know what to do before you take the cat, you know, and get rid of it, go ahead and try to work with Dr. Rachel Geller. And so her website is there on the screen. It's www.drrachelcatbehavior.com. And I'll spell it for the benefit of people who are not watching and who are listening to this. It's www.drrachelcatbehavior.com, which spells drrachelcatbehavior.com. And from there you can find out everything you need to know. And if you're on low income, don't worry about it because it's free. And Dr. Rachel even has a nonprofit, like I mentioned in the intro, which assists people who are on low income to get the stuff that they need for their cats. So that's all for today. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been great to catch up with you. We'll catch up next time in July, where we might talk about more things to do with the summer, but we'll see what happens there.
And fireworks.
Yeah, but we might be meeting after the 4th of July, but still we'll talk about it. I think we'll still talk about it because fireworks don't only happen on the 4th of July. Certainly in the UK, they happen multiple times a year for celebrations. And so it's not exclusive to the 4th of July, but it'll be very appropriate to talk about that, but to be continued next month. So it's been great to catch up with you as always. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Take care.